Support for KMUW's Into Music podcast comes from McClelland, reminding listeners that Frank Sinatra coined the word skibbity in Strangers in the Night, which you can listen to in their downtown Wichita showroom. More info on McClelland's innovative sound, lighting, and video technology can be found at maxsound.com.
Hi, I'm Jed Bodwin, and you're listening to Into Music from the KMUW studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network. My guest on this episode is Martin Luther McCoy. He's a singer, songwriter, guitarist, producer, actor, and multidisciplinary artist who has toured with The Roots and collaborated with other artists such as Erykah Badu and Saul Williams. His new album, Welcome Back Love, is his first full-length release in 14 years and is out now. He recently spoke with me about some of the lyrical themes on the record, especially the track Warmth of Other Suns, as well as his family's deep musical roots and what he sees as his purpose in life and music. That's Martin Luther McCoy on Into Music, coming up now. Thank you for putting something out there that's got emotion to it, but also some thought.
You know, it's what I do. It's what I've always done. My community, my rearing, my parents, the church home that I was blessed to be a part of, the neighborhood and that village that I was also blessed to be a part of, to go through the fist fights and the bikes being stolen and my first paper route job at the age of 10 and my uncle's apartment down the street who used to let me come over there and spin records on his turntable and hear the Al Green and the Marvin Gaye What's Going On albums and Bootsy, my older brother being a funkadelic head to the core. All these different things impacted me in different ways. And one thing that dawned on me is that I'm here because of vinyl, that whole way of life and the experience and the sound impacted me in such a way. So when I run into Lenny Kravitz in high school, going into college, I actually went to go see Lenny shortly after he transformed his name. What did he used to call himself? It was Blue something. Anyway, I'm catching him early on in his Let Love Rule space. And I was like, wow, this guy is on it. And the horns and the sonics involved made me feel like I had been welcomed back to a home that I had forfeited and surrendered because digital compact discs were so amazing and so fast and were so cool and that they would spin and you could jump to a track and all these things. But there was a sacrifice. I didn't catch it, not audibly. And when I was reintroduced to the music that went back to those previous tenets of production style, I never let it go. I produced this record not in an analog sense, not in an analog studio. Majority of the production, it's a mix. Some of the songs are recorded with live drums, live bass, live recorded horns and all that. And then the other elements that I can edit or play on my own in the studio were done so more or less because it was a way to be efficient with production. Ideally, I will be going into the studio and dropping well-rehearsed music, line up the microphones, everybody ready, let's play the song. Because there's a different brilliance and a different experience when you can bring the music out that way and then not edit it. I can spend years editing songs. On this album, there were years spent editing or re-editing or retweaking and retooling. The song ultimately is the same. The message ultimately is the same. It could have a little bit more shimmer. It could have a little bit more background, this candy, vocals, different approach to the guitar solo. The song is the same. And what I'm realizing is that with what I want to communicate, I need to move at the speed of instinct versus I could do all these different things with this one thought. You could Suno the hell out of a song. I don't want to do any of that. My instinct is to write it, get with the group of guys that I know and women that I know that can perform and enhance what I do naturally, and let's lock it down and record it. Most of the music that I still listen to was recorded that way. So Welcome Back Love, for me, is my own returning to something that had been either lost, stolen, forgotten, sold, forgotten, you know what I mean? And it's all metaphoric at the same time. It is literal. in the songs and the subject matter.
There's that thing I feel like that happens where it's like this continuous flow of time where it's like we hear sounds and we go, okay, that might be something that was influenced by the 70s, but it feels like now. And maybe you're singing a line about somebody who's gone, but it feels like they're still here. You know, this, like I said, you know, continuous feel that I think also speaks to that title.
I'm glad you said that because, you know, belief system, I have dialogues with my allies and my artist friends because I think one of the most powerful gifts to a human being is your ability to have free will and to fashion that free will into something that you believe. Belief is like the greatest weapon known to man, in a sense, because you believe something that you think you should be fearful of, you're now going to react and build something that's going to make you feel less fearful. You're not going to do all that if you don't believe that you have a real threat. If I don't believe that this sound or this approach is necessary, then I can dispatch it and just go with whatever the prevailing wind is. But if I believe that I need to say something that is counter to whatever that prevailing wind is, then that belief is what is driving me to make that step. So just look at how powerful thought is, because oftentimes we live in a manifestation of the things that we've been thinking. We wouldn't hold on to it if we didn't believe it had value. Belief at the core of all these decisions. You said something that triggered a thought about the continuation or the continuum of life. And if I speak my brother's passing into a reframed existence to where I just saw your daughter and man, ain't she beautiful? Well, I just saw is now. My brother passed and his life is over, but I'm speaking to him in the song. So there's a presence that I'm invoking about his life that now will be eternalized, I believe. You know what I mean? And because of that belief, it manifests in the way that I work with words or the way they work through me.
I mean, I don't know. I guess talking about belief, I guess I've come to a place in life where I guess people might be gone in their physical form, but I'm now at a place where it's like they go on. I have conversations with friends who have passed, you know. I had one this morning.
You keep them active and engaged and present. When I talk to mediums, they confirm that those spirits are active. They confirm it. It's without a question. They confirm it. So then I'm like, well, you know, are they swirling around all the time? Should I be talking to them all the time? And it's not necessarily that they aren't, but what do you believe? Because if you feel like you can pull that spirit into your right now atmosphere, then more than likely you are doing so. There's something about thought, because like you can curse me out right now without saying a word out of your mouth. But you can visualize, you can hear the sound out of your voice, you can hear all the words you would choose. That power exists in a realm somewhere. That ability, that conjuring, that equation, it exists. It's not just a thought. A thought is powerful. But more than that, you got the whole action, the whole sequence. You know, your body language, your posture, your hand gestures, you can see it all. Well, where is that seeing and that knowing? Because it lives somewhere. When you invoke that person's memory, you're bringing them into a space that is real. Can't always take a stick and prod it. Can't always cut a knife through it, but it exists somewhere. We just talking, sharing. I love music. You know, I do the best I can with the gift. I got it from my grandmother, Ruby Mae Watkins. She used to be the voice of Marshall, Texas. And like in my bio, I was asked about the first memory I have about music. And I'm like, I can remember the feeling of having her hold me in her bosom and she just would hum. And maybe it would quiet me down. Maybe it would stop me from wilding out. But she would hold me and she would hum. And I think she was also initiating a transference process of her gift into my ears and into my soul about sound, the power of sound, and I haven't let go of it. My older brother got it. My older sister got it. My father obviously had it. He was a singer, but he couldn't pursue singing. He had to put food on the table. He had to go to the military in order to get the opportunity to go to college, and he didn't shake a stick at that. He jumped in there, and he got out of school and went to California where he did boot camp. And by being in California for about 2 or 3 months sleeping on couches, he finally started to figure out how to get himself employed, sent for my mother, and the rest is our story.
The connection with sound is so, like, sound and motion, right? Like, babies want to be held and moved. Music is motion, so it's so just basic, right?
The vibration, right? And it reverberates both ways, but it is living. It's sound heals. Sound can distort these chakras, you know, these vibrational frequencies that we respond to. It's different. You can probably recall a time when the 808 kick drum was not ubiquitous, was not everywhere, was a new thing. When we heard it in the street, it was just like someone just opened up and unveiled a source of food, water, you know what I mean, that you were starving for and you didn't even know it. When that 808 dropped, or you did know it, because it is also reminiscent of the drum that was created in physical form that could be beaten and it can reverberate in a certain way. And I'm definitely speaking about African. Well, now we have the ability to push a button and reproduce that, because the drum of a drum set can't do that. And when we hear it, we automatically know what to do with it. A lot of my friends, some of my white friends when I was a kid, they would be like, nah, whatever that quote unquote jungle music is, that ain't real. You can keep that. I think about them from time to time, because that same thing that they thought wasn't real has just transformed the world.
But it's real if it comes from a real place.
Because again, they could have a belief system that says, I still don't like it. It still ain't in my soul. I still could do without it. And that could, you know, that could be their perspective.
Well, I was thinking too about, as we're talking about new and old, and I was thinking about, that's why they call it, I guess that's why they call it the blues.
Uh-huh.
And, sometimes you hear a song in a different way when somebody else performs it. That's definitely how I heard it, you know, coming from you. Was that a song that you always loved, or was it something that, like, hit you later and you said, okay, I think there's something else I can do with this?
Multiple affirmations in this song. I'm an Elton John fan. I love the video. I still can see it when it would, you know, air on MTV. I actually straightened out the song from its, three, four originally timing, and I straightened it out to like 4/4 and performed it. But it was nothing that I thought about recording. That was years ago. Recently, an organization called Continuum was formed with a fantastic producer at the helm, Scott Jacoby, out of New York. And he's a famous producer, award-winning and all the things. And he and I have been friends for a while, about 2 decades, and he just hit me out of nowhere saying, hey, I got this version of Elton John song that I'm reproducing, and your voice came to mind. I wonder if you'd consider singing it. And I was like, well, you know, I'm writing and producing an album right now, so singing somebody else's material is not anything that I've only done maybe a handful of times. But send it anyway. And he sent it to me at the right time. It comes on, it's slow, it's moody, it's straightened out, it's haunting. And I was like, yo, the track even feels like in a drug addicted coma-esque kind of a space that had nothing to do with poppy, fun, happy go Elton. I immediately sang the verse that you hear. I immediately played a guitar solo, the same solo that's in the song. I wasn't even hooked up and didn't think about what I was playing. I just started playing along to just get a vibe. With me and music making, I'm going to dump 100 different, that might be an exaggeration, 10 different versions of something. The vocal approach, the lyric, the guitar work, you name it. Everything with that one was a one take. And then he went and, you know, he enjoyed it tremendously and said, hey, I want to keep a lot of this make a few changes and then send it to me. So I made the edits that he wanted and I sent it to him. I gave him some thoughts about production that I thought would enhance a couple of spots. And it was not his agenda to do those things, but they end up working out. And again, it's just going off of instinct. That's how the song came to be.
You are also a visual artist. And it something struck me there, too, because you're talking about in music making, you have all these different choices. You know, you can do like 14 things. If you're painting or drawing or something, I mean, there's a whole bunch of choices in front of you all the time. But you got canvas, so you got to be careful, right?
I mean, it could be a digital canvas. It could be the way you're outputting or silk screening onto a physical form, like, you know, fine art. It could just be sketching on a piece of paper. And then that becomes tattoos that you put on your body. So you do want to put some thought into it. But there's a certain thing with me and an expression. You know, I'm looking at sculptures in the sand or in the popcorn that's on the ceiling. This is where this started when I was a kid. I can see dragons and eagles and eyes and mountains and picturesque. The topology of a hillside and all these different things just from staring at the ceiling. I got in trouble enough to where I was, you know, go to your room. Well, for most people, that's like, oh, wow, I got to stay in the room. I turned the room into my adventure house. I had my fishing poles in the room. I had my bicycle in the room. I'm cleaning it. I'm reworking the mechanics of the brakes or the positioning of the seat and the handlebars or whatever. So and then staring at the ceiling started to inform me of just, you know, shapes and ways to, you know, it's nothing but popcorn on the ceiling, but it's something to someone who believes that it's more than just popcorn. So there's just been like an ongoing a way that I approach life, I guess. There's a certain fluidity to it. And my clothes, they'll often be designed or edited or augmented, you know, painted on. Whatever. It's just like expression. There's a thing about, see, I live in San Francisco and living in other cities like New York and Los Angeles and Atlanta, San Francisco has extracted blackness and basically said, we don't need that. We don't necessarily want that. We're having a bit of a time figuring out why we should even celebrate that. So I don't walk through the city and see my reflection and feel the comfort and the recompense of home. It's still, in a lot of ways, the place that had the signs on the front lawn that said, apartment available, Negroes do not apply. There are still deeds on the properties that say, do not sell this to house to someone other than Caucasian. There's still energy in the air that will say, you can feed our machines, we won't support your machines so robustly. And that'll just have to be what we're calling the even playing field. So with me and my music, with me and my appearance, with my outlook on what I want out of this world and this life, I have to bring it with me. I have to wear it. I have to paint it and create it. I have to apply for the application and the grant and the possibility of being supported by other organizations, which uniquely hasn't happened so robustly at all. And I still have to figure out and have the wherewithal to keep on going. Because, and it's not anti-San Francisco or anywhere. It's just that there are machines that are out there to support certain folks and they may not support other folks. Well, that can't be the defining issue as to why I do or do not accomplish something that I believe is destined. So I carry my belief and I put it into the things that I touch.
I do want to ask about The Warmth of Other Suns.
Oh, man.
Were you inspired in part by the book?
I'm going to tell you exactly how it happened. Because a lot of what you see that is me is the result of a think tank energy, a hive mind conglomerate of allies. And some of those allies would be like Saul Williams, Sanford Biggers, Jahi Sundance, Jeffrey Alston, my wife, Jeannie Anyanwu McCoy. There's a few people, Russell Gatewood from the DJ, world famous DJs. And we always have conversations about stuff, you know, that we think is important. And in this particular instance, I was talking about, well, what I was talking about is inconsequential to what Jeff responded with. And he said, hey, man, that reminds me of this book I meant to tell you about called The Warmth of Other Suns. And I said, what? And he said, this book by Isabella Wilkerson called The Warmth of Other Suns. I said, stop right there. I'll call you back. Because I don't know what the book is about. But when I heard the phrase, immediately I heard the melody. And I heard the question. Or it really is a statement. Maybe we'll find our life in the warmth of other suns. Maybe we'll reach our height in the warmth of other suns. Wow. So now I can get on the phone with him and be like, yo, tell me what it's about. He told me what the book was about. I went and got the book. By that time, my song was already written. So the book and my song don't have any parallel messaging or story. They just share the name. So when you think about what I'm saying, we are aware of your fear and exhausted from having to hide who we are. Pretending that we're less won't make you stronger in the end. We suffer from black pain for white gain. Well, what does that mean? Crack laws versus cocaine. This is coded, but if you understand the history and the bureaucratic processes in the structural way that have been antagonizing, removing opportunity, dismantling neighborhood, community, and familial structures, then maybe you can understand the wave or the tsunami that's been attacking us ever since. So I need to counter that tsunami somehow. I got to figure out a way to rudder this ship somewhere, because the waves are not going to stop. And my writing often becomes, for some people, it'll be the inkling of thought, the seed that gets planted. For me, it might be, finally, I captured all this information that I wanted to share because I saw something coming. I know you. You're willing to rid the world of all who would oppose you. And who is that? Well, I know who it is. And I know a bunch of who they are. But just saying, hey, you're this and you're that, and I'm not, or I'm better, or this is wrong. Well, there's a lot of that out there. That's not the art that I need to add to the world. I need to provoke some critical thinking, though, because I see the tsunami coming in of agents and AI, and critical thinking is not required in a world where AI can dictate what's good and what's bad, what's good to eat, what's bad. But AI can also say, well, you're a person of color. You don't qualify for this loan. You're a person of color. You're going to have to pay three times as much more for this insurance. You're a person of color. All of the good food produce is not going to go to your area of town first. And who's programming AI? People that do or do not have bias in their optical lens of the world. How can I ensure that the even playing field ever existed or ever could exist if I am reliant upon a system that has historically attacked and removed advantages at every opportunity for people to look like me? So the warmth of other suns is posing the prospect of there being another ecosystem, something that actually sustains my soul and my community and my family without having to force us into a bridled situation that we only get to enjoy a little bit of joy and reward at this system's allowance. Can we reach our height, our own altitude, without having to worry about the gaze of anyone outside of our own community? Can we feel that simple regularity in life and everyday living? Is that possible? Did I even know that it wasn't happening now? Are you telling me that we're really not free? I don't know exactly what message someone is going to receive, because I'm not going to dictate what the outcome for someone is, but I will pose the question. I will avail the ponderance to the listener's ear. And the warmth of other suns to me is a global triumph. And I say that meaning it's not just my song to dismantle, and it is a flag that I'm waving about anti-Black bias. It is a flag that I'm waving that, or it's an ice pick at white supremacy construct. It's also a prayer and a mantra. And production wise, string arrangements, Mina Choi and the Magic Orchestra. It's a feat of Marcus Machado on the lead guitar. It's music. It's love in an oral form. What did you think about the song? That's an even better question. Because now I've given you a lot more detail about it. Without having any of that detail, what struck you?
A lot of what you said, a lot of, we have great capacity as human beings to endure, but should we always be in a place where we have to endure? Shouldn't we be in a place where we should thrive?
Great question to ask. And there are probably some strong reasons to oppose global thrivation versus global control. I'm not interested in the control mechanisms at all. I understand, I get the dynamics of power and the way things have been constructed. And again, these are by minds that are not necessarily seeking to see me celebrate life the way that I feel I should be able to. But they also give me great purpose as to who I should forge this weapon for.
You've been listening to a conversation with Martin Luther McCoy. His new LP, Welcome Back Love, is out now. You can learn more about him and all his music at martinluthermccoy.com. You can learn more about this podcast and all programming on our station by visiting our website, kmuw.org. Send us your questions and comments at info@kmuw.org. And find all the latest programming notes on that website as well. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time. And as always, we'd like to remind you that our theme music is composed and performed by Torrin Anderson.